So, John, we often think about and prepare for failures in IFR flying. Now we're talking about a failure of the ATC system, which until recently never occurred to me that this could really happen. So I want to ask you, how urgent is this? You said in your expert response that every facility prepares and there's an action plan in place. So I'm thinking if everything goes as it should, even if I have to do a full procedure approach, I should be able to get an approach clearance at my destination. But you're feeling it's urgent enough to divert. So help me understand, how urgent is this and why for me as a pilot?
Okay, well, first of all, I don't think it's urgent that, you know, we're not on fire here. We're not loaded up with ice. But we got to start thinking about a plan. Something major has happened. Most pilots would not understand the impact that this has on the system and the potential rolling impact that it's going to have as things cascade. So to my mind, it's much more like monitoring the weather, monitoring a freezing level, something like that. We got to start making a plan here. The original plan very possibly could work to just continue on our cleared route and continue on our altitude. But you really got to start thinking about what's going to happen if all of a sudden they say descend and maintain 4,000 because they want to get you down to the lowest altitude to get out of the way of traffic, or give you a reroute, 100 miles out of your way, something like that. So it's maybe a once-in-a-lifetime event, but it's the kind of thing where with all the other stuff that we do as instrument pilots, you're sitting up there at 15,000 feet and all of a sudden you get thrown a curveball and you got to start thinking about how am I going to manage this situation? What are my options and what's the best way of going? So that's kind of why I would have chosen to divert to an airport that gives me a lot more options rather than continue on.
Now, isn't it true, though, that you're going to be in the same boat with all these other people, and many of them are going to have the same decision into what's already a busy airport in Oklahoma if your goal is to get out of the system and have a kind of a low-stress way of dealing with this? Isn't Oklahoma sort of like the closest hornet's nest that you're about to fly into, you and everyone else?
Yeah, but it's I don't think it's going to be overwhelming. You're within about 75 miles or so of Oklahoma City at that point. You would be in their radar coverage or very quickly. And there's lots of good airports to divert there. There's Wiley Post, Will Rogers, Enid, Norman. So I don't think that would be much of a problem. And I think the ace in the hole there is looking at the low altitude chart with the center boundaries. It puts you on the north side of Fort Worth's airspace. From there, you could get into Kansas City and make a right turn and into Memphis and completely bypass that whole trouble spot to the east. So I think it gives you just a lot more options. And there's nothing more satisfying than having a full fuel tank when you're faced with uncertainty like this. And it gives you that. So I'd be seriously considering that before I got too far to the east, where now Oklahoma City is behind you and you start running out of options. You'd be turning around after having burned another hour's worth of fuel.
Yeah, I agree with John. I think fuel is a critical thing here. This is a pretty tightly planned flight. I mean, it's certainly adequate. The first thing you need to do is get some fuel. Now you've got some options. As John suggested, drive. Maybe you can wait for the weather and fly VFR over there. But I think it's prudent to say, I'm just not going to fly on hoping everything is good.
My big question, though, is how likely are you going to be able to get a change of destination, regardless of which one you choose? ATC is currently overwhelmed. You're on a clearance. They've got a route for you. It's kind of like a lost comm situation. You motoring along is not going to cause them any extra workload. But now you want to get on the frequency along with everybody else and try to get a new clearance. And I just don't know. I'm just curious what your take on that is.
Well, I think that it would be relatively easy. I mean, this whole thing has a lot of conjecture to it based on the facts as we've presented it in a scenario. But if you said to the Albuquerque controller that I want to get out of your hair, he would say, okay, clear direct Oak City and contact Oak City approach on something and goodbye. It's the quickest and easiest way to get it resolved. There's not a lot of downside to it, and I think they would be happy to get rid of you. You got to think about what happens here in this situation. Yeah, they have radar coverage because today with fusion and the ability to import all different radar sites, Albuquerque or even Oklahoma City would probably have radar coverage in that area, but they don't necessarily have frequency coverage. And that can start to be an issue too. So the more people that they can get rid of and get off the frequency quick, the workload goes down and the ability to provide service to the ones that they have left would go up. So all in all, I think it would be, if I was in that situation, somebody said they wanted to get out of my area, go by. You know, you're the quickest and easiest way to get rid of somebody.
So everybody wants to get rid of you and everyone is only going to begrudgingly take you is sort of the situation you're in, it sounds like.
I think I probably would continue on here, not with a lot of confidence, but I think my feeling would be up at 15,000 feet, overflying the mess might be preferred. And then you get to your destination ideally. But it's been really interesting to hear you, John, talk about how this might play out because I really didn't know. I think that would be my choice, but without a lot of confidence.
Yeah, I like John's thinking regarding the choice of Oklahoma City over Hobart, if you were going to make that decision, for the idea that there are more services there and not only ATC services, but also ground services like rental cars, hotels, restaurants, that sort of thing. I think in any general flights, when pilots are faced with a decision en route of having to divert somewhere, whether it's weather or mechanical issue, assuming it's not something that requires an immediate response, then the idea of encouraging pilots to kind of think about that, of what's on the ground when I get there, as opposed to just picking the next airport that might be right in front of you that's really convenient, that's in the middle of nowhere with no services, is not always the best choice if you can safely continue maybe another direction or a little bit further to get to a place where you have more options. I think that's a good point that often pilots don't learn in training and don't necessarily pick up until they've got some experience.
Would you, though, you said if you would make that decision, Tom, would you make that decision or would you have kept going?
I'd probably... Particularly now, what I know now, I mean, I guess with like many of us, I guess I didn't know the term ATC zero before recent times. But given what I've heard about what happens in that airspace and how confusing it can get and how people can get backed up, vectored all over the place, holding, I've talked to some airline pilots who have been caught up in it and the big diversions that they've had to make. And thinking about the fuel situation, I'd probably go to Oklahoma City. My first thought was Hobart. But then in thinking through, as John did about the services available, that's where Oklahoma City, which is pretty nearby, to Hobart, becomes, I think, a good choice.
And getting a clearance out of Hobart, you know, you could get fuel there more than likely, but you may get stuck on the ground there for a day. Whereas Oak City has their own, radar service and their own approach control. So a lot better services there.
Is there anyone else who would keep going along with Ryan one way or another? Or is everybody else diverting to Oklahoma City? Even Doug? Do you go into Oklahoma City?
20 years ago, I would have kept going. but the more I fly and the more things that have gone wrong, I think I would probably, at this point in my life, I'd head to Oklahoma City. As much as I dislike that city, don't take that personally, folks. No, there's good barbecue there, so it's okay. I'm a vegetarian.
Now, going back to the Hobart option of, you know, and I appreciate what you said, Tom, about pilots often think about, especially with, you know, any kind of an unusual or urgent situation, oops, I need to get on the ground now and grabbing the nearest airport rather than what might be the best airport. But Hobart has ceilings of 3,000 feet, 10 miles visibility. You could drop down below the clouds and take a look ahead. There are a couple low ceilings along the route. There's not a lot of reporting, but good visibility is below. And there really are airports every 20 to, 40 miles or so. I want to put that VFR option back on the table here. Obviously, none of you would have decided to take it. But is that such a terrible choice? Dropping out of the system and picking our way along and, evaluating that way when we could land and refuel in all those kinds of places.
It's an option. Oklahoma's pretty flat. If you could stay comfortably above the windmills and oil rigs and things like that. But I think eventually you would find yourself having to land somewhere and get back in the system. And where's the best place to do that? Is the best place to do it, ADA or one of those small airports along the way, or is the best place to do it a larger airport with an approach control? Because you know that you're not going to be able to get a pop-up. That's ruled out. So that kind of takes that off the table.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You'd better be pretty confident it's going to work because you're not getting back in. You're not getting a pop-up.
Same point with Ryan. Once you give up that IFR clearance and now you're down there VFR, you're not going to probably get into Oklahoma City if you finally get there and decide that's the plan to be.
One of the things that I wanted to touch on just a little bit too is the workload and what happens to that controller. If we go back to where we started in the beginning, the Albuquerque controller all of a sudden winding up with this huge hunk of West Texas and Oklahoma airspace now, even though they have the radar coverage and maybe even the frequency coverage, one of the things that we always found in these tabletop exercises was nobody knows each other's procedures. The whole air traffic system is built on letters of agreement and procedures. We deliver airplanes, arrivals and departures to and from airports over a certain fix. Jets will come at a certain altitude over a fix, props at a different altitude. The Albuquerque controller now has no idea how to deliver Fort Worth traffic. You probably have a binder someplace at the position where you could look it up and everything. The analogy that I use is, the airline crew where everybody had to fish and now they call in the back and they say, hey, does anybody know how to fly a plane? And even if you were an experienced jet pilot, getting in another airplane that you don't know the speeds or systems or anything like that, you'd be fumbling just as much. So just because there's a controller talking to you doesn't mean that it's going to go smoothly.
One of the things that you brought up, John, was just about position reporting and how in our modern direct GPS world you'd even deal with this. Again, we have a lot of experience around the table. Let's suppose you decided to continue. Maybe Oklahoma City wasn't on the table for whatever reason. Maybe it wasn't as close by. Maybe you had plenty of fuel on board. You decided to continue. What's the right way to continue? And when do you speak up if you feel like they've forgotten about you in this system? Because as you said, you're on radar, but communication could be an issue. So how do you handle that? How would any of us handle that?
Well, if you couldn't get through, you could try a relay with another aircraft or something. But it does, the research that we went through with this kind of brings up the disconnect between those 1951 air traffic rules and the way we operate today. The position reporting stuff, even the lost comm rules are very different the way we operate as opposed to what the rules say. So it goes back to common sense. What would you do in a situation like this? Kind of make it up as you go along, I think.
Well, building on that a little further, and I put this again out to the whole table here, because, as Tom said, I never even heard of this before the pandemic struck. And then suddenly it was this term. And yeah, I have friends in the airlines too, who are like, I can't believe what we had to go through. It all worked out. The system works, but I never saw that coming. You mentioned, John, preparing for this in your planning and making sure you have enough fuel to get out of the affected area. Other than in ground school being told what that little sort of jagged line on the en route chart was, I don't think about whose airspace I'm necessarily flying through or out of. Is it really practical to factor that into alternate planning and fuel planning? Or is this just, sometimes you get struck by lightning, as it were. Something goes crazy wrong and you deal with it, and you can't really prepare for that. Is this something that we really need to prepare for?
No, I don't think it's something that you would plan for in every flight. But the goal of this is to just to raise people's awareness that this situation can happen. And it's just one more little thing that a good instrument pilot would have in a toolbox, a bag of tricks. There's things that we never heard of going into this, as Tom said. And now all of a sudden, yeah, it's a reality. And things like this may happen again, or something else may happen. And I think just the more that you have that general background knowledge of how the system works to make a series of good decisions when something like this does happen is useful. And trying to get the word out in a platform like this is, I think, useful.
Given what we know now, and again to everyone here, will this change the way you plan what you're willing to accept for fuel availability, for having an alternate? Does it make for a bigger difference when you're traveling, you know, in the Eastern Corridor or NorCal, SoCal, where there's so many overlapping TRACONs versus out west where, you know, it's hundreds of miles controlled by one center that could be taken out and, you know, handed off to another center somewhere quite far away?
Well, I don't think it's going to change my plan significantly, but I'll bet it'll change some questions that Doug and I are asking on instrument tests now.
True. And as I said, I think realistically, you're not going to be able to do any difference in your planning, especially in the tactical sense that we saw here. But this may not be, we don't even know why this particular event happened. All we know is that the center is going down in 5 minutes. And they may be out for a longer period of time. And in the second part of this flight, once we've landed wherever we decided to and got some fuel, now we're going to have to do a lot more planning and figure how we're going to work in the system that may not be very stable, that may require non-radar procedures or non-towered procedures at a place. And I mean, who would ever thought that airliners would be landing at Las Vegas non-towered, you know, things like that. So just calling on the CTAF, calling clear of the runway. So that's just all part of being aware and back of the mind kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't think it would change this exercise would actually change the way I overall plan a flight. I can't really anticipate which facilities might go down, and I don't know enough about the procedures to really be able to figure out what the best plan B or C would be. But this does raise the issue that I see often now. We're all using app-based tools to plan our flights. And it makes it so easy to just plug in a flight plan, get a nav log, get a route, and go. And we don't spend enough time actually just thinking about where we're going, what the alternates might be, until we're under pressure. And so I just think this is a good example of just, you can't anticipate the specific issue, but you do need to spend a little more time now that you don't have to calculate ground speeds and fuel burns and wind correction angles. What's the weather along my route or just off my route? What are my options? If something, I don't know what happens. I just don't think we spend enough time with it. These tools are great, but they've let us become a little lazy perhaps.
You know, Bruce, that makes me think like the watchword for this scenario is that old what if, right? I'm almost makes me think about how with airline accidents now, we only really have an airline accident when something happens that nobody saw coming, some weird confluence of events or something that was just outside the box. That's what still gets us. And in GA flying, we do have the things that we prepare for regularly, diverting to another airport, an emergency aboard the airplane, a systems failure. But like we said at the beginning, the failure of part of the ATC system is one of those things. Like, all right, if we can't really plan for that, it's a rare event, but clearly it can happen and could happen again to any of us. There's a certain what if game there too, and it's a generic what if. Like, okay, what if something completely out of the blue happens. We know it could. Now I can play that game as I'm tooling along at 15,000 feet. Where could I go for any reason to just land and regroup? You know, because that is the thing that gets you out, slows things down, and gives you your options. Because truth be told, there's always some new unforeseen failure that could be a gotcha, and you're just going to have to deal with creatively on the fly.